City of Angels. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, I told you, this is going to be one of those Coast to Coast classic shows. Now, when we come back, it'll be your phone calls, your turn, with our special guest tonight, John Lear, on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. I'm George Norrie, John Lear with us. Your phone calls. We have put Richard in a capsule and have sent him on his way.
Thank God.
You love the guy, John.
I love him.
Where would we send him? To the moon or Mars? Where do you think?
Just encapsulate him.
Or just let it keep going.
Listen, wow. I wanted to say hello to Sally, Moppy, and Aaron, and I wanted to remind the listeners that they can see all this data on thelivingmoon.com. TheLivingMoon.com or LandOfLegends.us. All this stuff here that Richard just can't quite swallow. Take a look at the pictures yourself. Take a look at the evidence.
I love hearing you and Richard get together on this because, you know, what's fascinating is, of course, the expert of Cydonia and Mars. He brought that forward along with the several other people. And
well, I can't match his intellect. The thing is, George, I have the truth on my side.
Well, you know, you both come at it with different perspectives, and that's refreshing.
Yeah.
Let's go to the phones. You ready,
okay.
John?
Let's do it.
First time caller line, you're on with John Lear on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George, John. My name's Rob, calling from Louisville, Kentucky.
Hey, Rob, thanks.
Hey, yeah, I'm really glad to be finally getting through. I've tried a couple of times before, but didn't get a chance to talk to you guys. I had a question and a comment. I wanted to know if, John, if you had put any filtering on any of these photos that you've put up on the web. I've been filtering them in Photoshop for the past couple of hours since I first heard they were up, and I've had a couple of interesting things. First off, if you negatize the images, they look like daytime shots from Earth, you know, atmosphere, things like that. And there's the sky, you can obviously see where it seems like scratches were made in the actual negatives on the film to make the appearance of stars.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if you had a chance to filter anything yet, but I've just been doing that constantly for the past 2 hours. I'm just trying to...
No, one of NASA's problems with this whole Apollo program, with the moon program, is there is an atmosphere and there's gravity that holds the atmosphere in, and the sky is not black. And that's why those 15 truckloads of videotapes disappeared, is because they had no way to change the color of the sky. And so actually, if these are daytime shots, the sky is going to be blue or yellow, whatever it is. I don't know what color it is. I've heard that it's yellow. I've heard that it's blue. So that's what we're looking at there, and that was what NASA was faced with, and that's why some of the photo that was released to the public looked so fake, is because they had to blacken out the sky.
Okay, and I guess that's why when I negatize it, the sky giving it that quote unquote fake white look makes it look more like a daytime shot.
That's right.
Okay, well, great. I really appreciate that.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate you being a part of the program. Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi. Hey, John, I was wondering if there's any way to look at the geologic record and see if there's any evidence of there not being any high tides or low tides prior to 500 million years ago, and also if you think any other moons in the solar system were brought here from somewhere else.
I'm sure they were. There's, as I said before, all the planets are habitable. People similar to us live on them. Aliens live on them. There's certainly many of the moons were bought and put there.
Okay, and I just wondered about the geologic record. I have no idea if there's any way to tell.
You know, I don't know, but you could go to thelivingmoon.com and email Ron. He could help you.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks.
Okay, tell us about the soul catcher, John.
The soul catcher is the 6 mile high tower in the middle of Sinus Medi, right in the middle of the center of the moon. If you look at the moon, as you know, it's in rotational lock. It doesn't move. The same face points to us or toward Earth at all times. And the famous photo that Richard found, Lunar Orbiter 384M, shows that huge tower, and he also has two other photographs that that show that tower. I think that tower is what I call the soul catcher. When you die, your soul is goes to the soul catcher, and when you're born, just after you're born, they shoot your soul back into back down here into a small baby, probably one or two days old, sometimes as much as 2 or 3 weeks old. They want to be sure that the baby's going to live before they put a soul into it.
And that's where they store them?
Up there, yeah, that's one place they store them. Apparently, they have other places. Sleeper, who really knows a lot about this, had a really interesting thread, and I think you can still find it on AboveTopSecret.com, and it's called, "Are Extraterrestrials Real? As Real as the Nose on Your Face?" The thread is about 120 pages long, and it is so full of interesting information, and he talks about this soul issue.
Amazing. Let's move next west of the Rockies. Welcome to Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, George. Hi, John. This is Richard in Humboldt County, California.
Hi, Richard.
Guys, we have these great rovers on Mars that have been operating for 4 years already. How come we don't have anything like that on the moon?
Well, that's a good question. Maybe we do, and they don't tell us, John.
No, we don't need those on the moon. We got guys up there mining. All they do is trip over them, and they've got business to do up there. They've got vehicles riding all around. They don't want to trip over a moon rover. They already know all they need to know about what's up there. Why would they put a moon rover up there?
Those rovers on Mars, though, have just worked splendidly, haven't they? Way beyond what anybody thought.
Absolutely. They go, you know, a mile this way, a mile that way. It's fantastic what they can find out. And, you know, I think, I forget which vehicle it was. I'm trying to think now, Spirit, I forget, a year or so ago.
Spirit and Opportunity. Two different
okay.
ones, yeah.
Which was the one that ran out of power and the solar panels were...
Might have been Opportunity, but then the wind blew off or something.
No, the wind didn't blow, George, or whoever said that. Our secret astronaut team went up with some Windex and some Bounty paper towels and cleaned it off.
On Mars?
Yes.
No.
Absolutely, positively, without a doubt.
We flew up to Mars.
I got that from an ironclad source.
We flew up to Mars.
You can take that to the bank. We've been flying to Mars since 1966.
Polished it up.
And polished those solar panels up, and it's worked great ever since.
And then they came back.
That story about a dust being blown on and then blown off, it's fantasy. I mean, if you want to believe that stuff, it's okay. But NASA has people who sit there and dream up this. Well, let's tell them a whirlwind came along and blew the dust off.
See, I'm still waiting for that picture of an alien looking in on the camera or something like that.
No, the people on Mars look just like us. There's no alien up there. They're just like us. There's 600 million of them. Most of them live underground. They're a nice bunch of people up there.
Next up, Wildcard Line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hey, Happy New Year, George. This is Blair in Sedona.
Oh, thank you, Blair. You too.
Thank you, sir. And Mr. Lear, you know, it's interesting, George Adamski's 1955 book, Inside the Spaceships, page 157 and 158, mirror exactly what you're talking about, breathable atmosphere, even vegetation, and it's located on the rim, you know, from the view on Earth, so we really can't see the clouds because they're not as thick as they would be on Earth, but they are there, and he says it's even temperate on page 158. Have you been influenced by this book?
I've read the book. I've also read Howard Mencher's book. I've also read Truman Bethaven's book, and they have some really interesting things to say. As a matter of fact, what they corroborate what my sources say.
Well, if it also says that this group that Adamski got his information from says they have a large laboratory just beyond the rim of the moon, out of sight of Earth. So if that's the case, that means that our guys are working with these guys up there, unless they're coming from another dimension, right?
Not another dimension. They come from they come from probably another planet. But I think on the livingmoon.com, there's a picture of Zond that Zond 3 took, and it's an amazing picture. It was one of the first Russian pictures of the backside of the moon, and for some reason they didn't airbrush it. Now it's not that clear, but you can see gigantic structures there. As a matter of fact, on the edge on the limb of the moon from Zond 3, you can see a structure. It has three enormous tanks, and on the right side of it, it has an enormous arch. And the thing has got to be at least 20 miles long and 10 miles high. And that's a Zond Russian picture. I mean, you can, it's in any of the books, and it's on, I think it's posted on thelivingmoon.com. Take a look at it.
Well,
and it's thelivingmoon.com, right?
Thelivingmoon.com, right?
Okay, you got to put the "the" in there, folks, not just livingmoon.com. Any more questions, Blair?
Well, I was wondering if I could put by, and thanks, George, about the TV set analogy of our reality. In other words, you know, if we're on channel 3 of a big cosmic TV set, these folks can be on 5 and 6, and they downstep in their frequency or vibration, and we get to see them, but most of the time, they're invisible. And if you look 200 years ago, no such thing as X-rays or gamma rays. Well, they were there, but we didn't have the instrumentality sensitive enough to measure it. So aren't we in the same boat with these guys? We have to take a spiritual notch up before we're able to see them?
Good point. Read some of Sleeper stuff on AboveTopSecret.com. It addresses that.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to our next wild card line. Your turn. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, please.
I would like to ask John if he knows Gerald Carr. He went to take pictures of a comet Kohoutek. And if you do know him, if he's still alive, and could you help me get in touch with him?
Is he just a photographer, astronomer?
No, he was an astronaut.
Gerald Carr.
Yeah, Colonel Gerald Carr.
How do you spell his last name?
C-A-R-R.
Okay.
Right, I haven't heard of him.
No.
It was in 1973. And the mission for the comet Kohoutek is not mentioned in any of the NASA...
What is that mission?
It was a comet.
Well, I know that, but what was the mission?
He told me, I was an artist, and I made a piece of jewelry that he took with him in his private pack. And he told me that they were going up to take pictures of this comet, the comet Kohoutek.
Okay, was he part of the secret astronaut corps?
I don't know if it was secret or not.
Well, it must have been. Nobody knows who he is.
He's listed in, let's see, 1973.
I'm going to do a little search on him. What was his first name?
Gerald.
Gerald Carr.
Gerald Carr.
Right.
Anyway, I think he would talk to me about the mission, considering he took a piece of my art with him.
How old was he then?
I don't know.
Did you meet him or just talk with him on the phone?
I met him. I did a show at NASA in 73.
What kind of show?
A jewelry show.
All right.
And he commissioned me to do a piece of a ring for him. It's 72 grams of silver. The motif is a comet going across the sun, and he has a 1-carat diamond set in the head.
Well, Gerald P. Carr, he exists. Gerald Carr, let's see, he was born August 22nd, 1932, that makes, 70, he's going to be 75 years old, so he's not an astronaut anymore.
No.
He seems to still be alive,
okay.
I think.
Does it say what mission he was on?
Let's see, where was, what mission, special honors, experience. When informed of NASA of his selection for astronaut training, he was assigned as test, he logged into NASA experience. He was one of the 19 astronauts selected by NASA in 1966, he served as a member of the astronaut support crew for Apollos 8 and 12. He was the commander of Skylab 4, launched in 1973.
Right.
Okay. Well, that would have been it.
And then he retired from NASA in 1977. He is still alive, and you may find him. He might still be in Houston.
Okay.
Let's see, where could he be? Family owned business. I'm sorry to be just mumbling like this. He may be in Houston. He exists.
Good. I'd like to get another copy of a picture of the ring that I made for him.
Oh, I'm looking at his hand now, and he is not wearing the ring in this NASA picture.
No, he got it for his wife, and she didn't like it because it was too heavy. So he said, we're keeping it because the silver has flown, but we don't know what we're going to do with it. But, you know, it's been some years now.
I went to a portion of St. Louis University, Parks College at the time. Okay. Hey, thanks. Appreciate you being part of the program. Wildcard Line, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good evening.
Hi.
I heard earlier that Mr. Lear did mention that he thought that there was a thin but survivable atmosphere.
Yes, a breathable atmosphere.
And
it's
then,
equal to about 15,000 feet on Earth.
Yeah, a little thinner than what we experience at sea level. Well, I thought I remember. I had a fascinating book when I was a kid about the moon, and it showed. It said in year 1999 or whatever, they said we'll have domes on the moon, and they had little cars and stuff rolling around. And I got kind of interested in that type of stuff, and I could have swear I remember a book from when I was a young teenager, The Hollow Moon.
Yeah.
Well, there's one called The Hollow Earth.
I remember Admiral Byrd, and
right.
I was fascinated by that story too.
Is there one out there called The Hollow Moon? I don't know.
I can't quite remember.
I'll check.
But I do remember that someone surmised or put the thought in my head that at one point the moon had a pretty much full atmosphere like our own, and a large object going real fast narrowly missed it and sucked away a lot of it, leaving it with a thin atmosphere. Now that stone kept going. And it must not have hit the Earth, because it would have been just too much, I think. But what do you think the action would have been to the Earth itself from a large object spinning end over end, going right by, near miss? What would that do to the Earth? Would that switch its magnetic field?
Well, there'd be some problems.
Tinker with its rotation or make it wobble like a top getting close to the end of its issue or something?
There'd be some problems. I don't know exactly what they'd be. I don't think it took the moon's atmosphere. The moon's atmosphere has always been what it is because of its size.
Absolutely. And let's see. Checking this book, nothing like having great references here. Exit the Hollow Moon. Midnight Moon. That's all I have. Exit the Hollow Moon. That's it. Exit the Hollow Moon. That's about it. That sounds like it's a fictional book. Next up, let's go to our first-time caller line. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, how you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thanks.
Hey, thanks for the great work you guys are both doing. It's really important stuff. Hey, John, I was hoping to get on earlier to back you up. I remembered something I read. Dr. John Freeman and Dr. Ken Hills investigating a vapor cloud over 100 square miles on the moon. So there's definitely been incidents where vapor has been detected that they can't explain. So
pictures of NASA has pictures of clouds even on the near side, and so there's no doubt that there's an atmosphere there.
I wanted to ask you what is your take on the possibility that the moon and possibly some of the other moons around other planets in the solar system arrived here with a third body, be it Planet X or whatever you want to call it, that tore through and caused a lot of the strange little oddities that we find all the way out to Pluto and stuff, and possibly that Planet X hit a planet that Mars was orbiting, causing all the strange stuff that, for example, Mr. Hoagland has found on his site and their part of their data sets.
I don't know too much about that.
We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Don't touch your dial.